boots. Hello, dog. What have you been up to? Busy day? Rosie, it's cold out there today.
Think it's glove weather.
All you need is gloves.
Yeah.
I added one more podcast to the giant podcast bin. Now you have plucked that podcast out and started listening.
I took my microphone and found some human folk. Then I recorded all the noises while we spoke.
My name is Adam Buxton, I'm a man.
I want you to enjoy this, that's the plan.
Hey, how you doing, podcats? Adam Buxton here. What's this? That is the sound of A. Buckles wearing big, clumpy walking boots and stomping on the bristly tops of stubble in a field that was harvested a few weeks, months back. Now it's full of all these little stubs. And if you tread down on them from directly above, as long as you're wearing the correct footwear, it is emotionally rewarding. No one gets hurt. The stubble don't mind. It's a great, great winter treat. It's not even winter, though, is it? It's just autumn. But it feels very wintry today out here in the East Anglian countryside in the second half of November 2020. It's colder than it's been for a while. I would guess, because I'm very good at guessing the temperature, I am also known as Thermos, Lord of Temperature. And Thermos guesses that today it is... Thermos says 11 degrees centigrade. Let's check on the weather app. Totally wrong. It's 8. What was Thermos thinking? Of course it's 8. 11. That would be sunbathing weather out here. Oh, well. Thermos is off his game. Let me tell you a bit about podcast number 141. Which features a rambling conversation with British comedian and TV presenter Joe Lycett. Lycett facts. Joe, currently aged 32, was born in Hall Green, Birmingham. He attended the University of Manchester, where he studied English and drama. Joe won Chortle's Student Comedian of the Year Award in 2010, and then their Best Newcomer Award the following year. Since then, in addition to live shows and stand-up tours, Joe has been a regular presence on radio and TV panel shows. And in the last couple of years, he's been the host of the BBC's Great British Sewing Bee and Channel 4's prank-based consumer show, Joe Lycett's Got Your Back. At the start of this year, 2020, he started shooting a new series of Travel Man, having taken over as the host from Richard Iowade. However, SARS-CoV-2, one of my least favourite sequels, has meant that Travel Man filming has been put on hold for the time being. My conversation with Joe, which you're about to hear, was recorded in London back in March of last year, 2019. And I emailed Joe the other day to let him know our conversation was going out, to apologise for the delay, and to ask if he wanted me to say anything particular in this intro. This was Joe's reply. Hello, sir. How lovely to hear from you. I did wonder if we'd been accidentally appalling on the podcast, so it's good to know it's suitable for public consumption. Nothing to plug, so just say something about how gorgeous I was and how sexually alluring you found me, or something. Maybe mention about how, when I smile, my eyes widen in this really adorable and reassuring way, and that for a split second you feel that everything is just so, that there is nothing at all to fear, that you can achieve anything, climb the highest of mountains and swim the longest of rivers, that the world is bright and full of wonder, and it is all for you. Hope you're keeping well. Pest Dishes, Joe. And there's a big kiss. It's a good email response. That's what you want when you email someone. Our conversation featured, amongst other things, talk about Joe's net worth, according to a site I found on the internet, link in the description, hidden camera shows and pranks, ASMR, and the rights and wrongs of swearing. I should say that our conversation does involve strong language, some quite frank sex chat, and towards the end I give Joe a gift that involves some close mic mouth noises. That's the ASMR bit. That was a deal breaker for that partridge.
Fact-checking Santa here. That was actually a pheasant.
However, before we got to all that kind of stuff, we started by talking about the first time we met. I've only met Joe once or twice, actually. Twice, in fact. And we talked about that first time, which was after a particularly traumatic comedy show in Bristol. Back at the end for a little bit more waffle, but right now with Joe Lycett. Here we go. How are you doing, man? I feel as if you're an old friend, even though really we've only met twice, I think.
We did a gig together.
Yes.
And was it Bristol?
Oh, lordy.
In that big tent.
I reminded myself of the facts of that evening because it was maybe my worst gig ever.
What?
Nightmare gig.
Why?
Well, I don't know if you remember, but I double booked myself by accident. I was doing a show in London that night.
Mm.
This was the 9th of July, 2015. And I guess I didn't put it in the diary, and I agreed to do this show at the Bristol Comedy Garden.
Mm. That's the one.
Queen Square. Really nice gig, which I'd done before and had a good time at. And I said, yeah, okay. And I was supposed to be headlining, I think. But I didn't realize that I had said yes to this other gig in London doing a Bug show. I do the show Bug where I introduce music videos.
Yeah.
So that was happening. It was supposed to be happening at the same time, basically.
Yeah. And London and Bristol are not doubleable normally.
You would argue. Exactly. And also, I'm currently not able to be in two places at the same time. So I got the London show shifted forward by an hour or something, and the Bristol one shifted back by an hour. And then Will, who does the Bristol show, he got hold of a limo bike. He booked me a limo bike.
They're so fun.
Have you ever been on one of those?
Yeah, I have, yeah.
So describe a limo bike for people who haven't been on one.
It's a sort of slightly longer motorbike. I think they are. I mean, I'm not an expert on motorbikes,
yeah,
or cars or transport in general. I could tell you the route of the 453 in London pretty well.
Yeah, that's, you're good on your roads.
I'm good on my roads. Where was the London gig? Where specifically?
It was on the South Bank at the BFI.
Mm.
So we headed out to Reading Services.
Oh.
On the limo bike.
Right.
It would have been about 8 p.m.
Oh, my God.
Summer's evening. Sun was going down. Beautiful evening.
Mm. Beautiful evening for a very stressful double up.
Yeah, although at that point it felt as if it was all going to work and the timing was going to work, and I felt important, Joe.
Yeah. Well, you're on the back of a limo bike.
On the back of a limo
which bike. Which I heard the Royals use quite a lot because it's an effective way, one, of getting through London traffic because you zip around all of the traffic, but also you're wearing a helmet so you're not recognisable.
Right.
So I heard that Will particularly loves a limo bike.
There
but, you know, you hear these things about the Royals, you know, could any of it be true? Do they even exist?
I would say that the idea of Will loving a limo bike is one of the more plausible rumours.
Yeah, the lizard stuff starts to get a bit...
That's why he wears the helmet.
Well, yeah, because he's a lizard. But presumably, if you're a lizard, they're very good at getting between little nooks and crannies. So you don't need the limo bike because you are a lizard. So
yeah.
You just sort of scuttle around.
Scurry around. But actually, the limo bike was great. I imagined having to hold on to someone round the waist.
Yeah, no, you don't. They've got like little handlebars on the side, haven't they? Yeah, you're right. You do feel important because, it's certainly not my MO to be jutting around London going between events very quickly.
We looked into the possibility of getting a helicopter.
Oh, that's fun.
That is fun, but that is prohibitively expensive.
Mm.
So that wasn't on. But limo bike was good. You're also in radio contact with the driver of the bike.
Yeah.
You have a little mic.
It's quite a lot of pressure there, isn't it, for that length of journey?
He was brilliant because he was obviously used to it and used to the fact that it's really quite alarming because you are weaving around at high speed.
Mm.
And then you get onto the motorway and he, well, I won't say what company he was from, but he did exceed the speed limit.
Oh, yeah.
On one or two occasions.
By how much?
I would say a load.
Oh.
It felt like we were going to take off, but maybe that's just because I felt so exposed. Maybe he never exceeded it.
So you haven't got the actual statistics.
No, I didn't. I don't know how fast we were going, but we were certainly overtaking absolutely everyone.
Okay. All right.
It felt as if I was going back in time because we were going so fast.
Got you.
It's like being on a fairground ride, you know, you're holding on. And I was sort of getting a bit kind of giggly and hysterical.
Mm.
And also a bit frightened on occasion, even though he was a brilliant driver. But he was telling me, he kept on talking to me to sort of keep me calm and saying, you know, it's quite normal for people to feel a bit freaked out.
Yeah.
But I've been doing this for a while. He told me he was ex-security for a variety of celebrities, including David Beckham.
Oh, wow.
And
I don't know if I'd find that reassuring or more concerning.
That would be good, wouldn't it?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. What does Beckham need security for? People coming at him for his hot bod?
Yeah, just sort of rogue tattooists trying to decorate him further. Anyway, it all went smoothly. We get to Reading Services, where I was to transfer to a car that would take me the rest of the way to Bristol.
Mm.
At that point, logistics and reality and traffic kicked in. And we just sat in traffic for 2 hours.
Oh, my God.
Outside Bristol.
Hang on, you leave London at 8.
Leave London at 8, get to Bristol Services around 9. I'm supposed to be on stage at 10. That wasn't happening.
No.
Eventually, I get to Queen Square after loads of phone calls to Will, the promoter. So what's happening with you at the time? Because you were emceeing that night, weren't you?
No, I wasn't.
Oh, were you not?
Oh,
you were just on the bill and you were nice enough to hang back.
Well, I wouldn't say nice enough. My cousin lives in Bristol and it became a small tradition to do that gig and then get pissed and stay at his.
Right.
So I was there for the long haul. And now you say it, I remember you being late, but I don't remember you being that late. But I mean, how late were you? How?
I think I was at least an hour late.
Right.
I went on stage just before midnight in the end.
Oh, okay.
And the crowd were really leery.
I just don't remember it being that late. But maybe I was really trashed. By that point, I probably could have been.
Had you had a good show, do you remember?
I feel like it was fine. I never feel like I come out of those gigs going, wow, what a...
Smashed it.
Yeah, I never think that was the one. I have this urge and instinct at gigs like that to get off the stage. So, yeah, I think it was fine. I think I probably underran because that's normally what I do.
The underrunner.
If somebody says, oh, you've got to do half an hour, there's a good chance I'll be doing somewhere between 20 and 25. And I feel like I get to the end of that 2025 and I've got nothing else. There's not one other thing I could say.
That's my kind of guy. I'm the same.
I never overrun. It's always under.
I'm exactly the same.
I'm sort of embarrassed for them. I sort of say, not embarrassed, but like apologetic. I'm sort of so sorry that you've come to see me. I don't wish to be a burden, so I'll leave before you.
Yeah.
Everyone can get home sooner.
Well, man, I felt the same way. When I got there that night, I think they were pretty drunk. How many people would you say? 1,500?
Yeah, that's probably about right.
Big enough.
big enough to, yeah,
to feel a kind of unmanageable wave of, whoa, what's this?
And it wasn't a Friday or Saturday, was it? It was sort of, I feel like it was a Thursday or
maybe
midweek.
Maybe.
So a lot of people would have been ready for bed by that point.
Yeah, yeah. And there was, they pumped smoke in there and stuff. So it just felt a bit infernal and crazy. And so I get on stage and I've got, my shows are often, you know, supported with AV and I have my computer. And
oh, God, yes, that's another level of complexity, isn't it?
So I get, I have to run on stage having not sound checked and plug my stuff in from scratch while I'm talking to the audience, which I don't really, I haven't got that much patter, you know, it's not much crowd work. And so I'm plugging in, I'm looking at the screen. There's a problem with the aspect ratio. I'm an aspect ratio queen. I don't want to go on with everything all squashed.
No.
And then I have to check for sound and, you know, all this sort of stuff. Meanwhile, the audience are kind of shouting things out a little bit and I'm trying to shout back and I'm sort of making jokes about, hey, this is a good gig, isn't it? A guy plugging in his laptop.
Yeah, yeah.
And that only goes so far. And then eventually, hooray, okay, I'm going to get started. And then I start doing my thing. I'm reading out YouTube comments. I'm interacting with hilarious little slides. And I'm thinking, okay, and I'm going, I'm already going too fast because I can feel that the energy is like, come on, come on, come on. We've been waiting. We've been waiting. Come on.
Yeah.
Finally here. So I'm sort of rattling through it a bit. And then I start getting heckled. I'm sort of ignoring it because they're loud anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But then I can hear definitely that someone is saying, boring.
I didn't realize you could hear me from, I was right at the back.
I couldn't even see
boring.
To the back. Boring. And I was thinking, boring?
Wow.
I was thinking, okay, like, I can understand people not liking it, but I didn't think it was, I don't think it's boring. Mm. I think it's, I mean, I like it. But anyway, so this person wouldn't shut up. So eventually I just had to deal with it. And also what was happening as well was the crowd was turning on her.
Yeah.
Because she wouldn't shut up. She was obviously a bit drunk.
Mm.
Boring. And the crowd goes, shut up. And it was getting ugly.
Yeah. It's funny that, isn't it? When they sort of, they feel like they're helping you, but actually they're just becoming ugly.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're creating a mob environment.
It was like Brexit Britain in there. Yeah. And
when was it? 2015.
2015.
So God, life was so simple.
It's the good old days.
The good
yeah.
old days.
Everyone loved each other except in that fucking tent. And so I say, I think, okay, I'm going to have to deal with her because she's not going to shut up. So I say, what's the problem? Why do you think it's boring? And she goes, it's just a presentation. And I was trying to think, like, what does she mean? She's right.
Yeah.
It is, in every conceivable sense, a presentation.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
does she mean, has she just come from the office where there's been a PowerPoint presentation and now she's come out for a night of comedy and it's just another guy sort of doing a variation on it?
Mm.
It's true, but doesn't she appreciate the fact that I'm doing a funny presentation?
Yeah.
And so it was really quite confusing. I was like, yeah, it
just
is a
as well. Just yeah. a presentation.
Just a presentation. This isn't... And the thing is, it tweaked an insecurity, which yeah. was that I'm not a real comedian. You know, I am someone that relies on these props. And if I was left to my own devices, just a man and his mic, I would have nothing, you know.
Yeah.
So it was all a maelstrom of insecurities.
So you came away from that gig and then did you go straight back to London?
No, that was not the end of it. Because I said to her, stupidly, I was like, I thinking, okay, I've got to deal with this because the crowd are getting really noisy and people like shouting mean stuff at her. And it was just getting gnarly. So I said, look, come on, let's hug it out. Let's hug it out. Which has sometimes worked for me before when I've
That's
had
nice,
random
yeah.
weird guys in the yeah. audience and stuff. Sometimes like there was a gig I did in Brighton and this big frightening looking guy was heckling me. And I just said, mate, I'm going to have to give you a hug. And so I came over and, you know, I knew he couldn't hurt me because it was in the middle of a show, but he really looked as if he wanted to.
Mm.
But I gave him a hug and actually it worked out. Everyone started laughing and he was fine. So I thought I'll do that again with this woman. I said, come on, let's have a hug. Before I'd even finished saying that, she was up out of her seat, running to the stage, jumped on stage,
whoa,
ran over to me, leapt at me, wrapped her arms around my waist. And I was like, whoa.
I don't remember this.
Yeah. And the crowd were going nuts. They were like, get off, what are you doing? I was like, wow. I didn't have anything funny to say about it. I'd been assaulted.
Yeah.
That's an assault, even albeit fun, in a way. But it was very, I was like, whoa, this is, my space has been invaded
badly,
someone that hates me.
Yeah.
And then she wouldn't let go. And then she was pretty hammered.
Mm.
Eventually, she goes back to her seat. By that time, I'm absolutely rattled.
Also, by that time, it's no longer boring and no longer just a presentation. So she has, in some way, sort of invalidated her initial heckle.
Yeah. Unfortunately, though, I didn't feel able in the moment to turn it into something more interesting.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, like, you're shook, aren't you, from your assault?
Yeah, but a good comedian would be able to ride that.
No, I don't know, really. That's totally up for interpretation, isn't it? Because I can't imagine lots of comedians that I love and adore would respond brilliantly to that, because that's not what they do. Like, a good in-the-moment comedian, I suppose, might do something with it. But that doesn't mean that every comedian has to have that skill or ability.
Mm-hmm.
Don't put yourself down, darling.
Thanks, man. Well, this is exactly...
You were fucking late to that show, though, and you should put yourself down for that.
This is the kind of nice response I got from Joe, listeners, when I came off stage, because I rattled through the rest of the show. I just got off stage as fast as I could. And I felt bad because it was kind of a rip-off, really. And I got some grief for it on Twitter the next day. In fact, someone tweeted, oh, I really enjoyed the festival, but Adam Buxton made me ashamed to be human.
Wow.
But it really rattled. The whole thing was so unpleasant. Anyway, I came off stage that night and you were still there and you were so nice to me. And it was so wonderful just to be able to talk to you and have a nice, normal, funny conversation. And it was you and your cousin. We just had a couple of beers and
and
we decompressed. And you were telling me about your Magaluf Weekender job.
Oh, yeah. Which is now Ibiza Weekender, because they felt that Magaluf had become... I think some girl sucked off about a dozen lads in a bar to get a bottle of vodka, not as part of the program, but in Magaluf. And so Magaluf then had that reputation, and they felt that that was slightly too far for their program. So they moved it to Ibiza.
Right.
I'm sure worse has happened in Ibiza.
I was going to say, that sounds like sort of a normal weekend in, in Norwich.
For you.
Me and my wife.
So, do you do sort of six lads each, or do you do the dozen each?
I do six, she does six.
Right, got you.
And then we get a couple of drinks out of it.
Half a bottle of vodka's worth it, isn't it, I suppose? Sure. I'd be far more up for that if that was on the table. They said, well, you can suck up a dozen lads for a full bottle of vodka, or half a dozen for the half bottle. I'm not going to get beyond the half bottle, am I? It's going to take me a while to get those six done.
Yeah. So. Or you can just do it individually for shots.
Mm, yeah.
And just see how you feel.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can sort of stagger it throughout the night, couldn't you?
Yeah.
See how you feel. Do you know what? I've had four now. I think I'm done for the night.
It must have happened somewhere at some decadent party. Yeah. And you could give it a sort of a... nationalistic angle, like you could suck off Russian guys, they would give you vodka.
Oh, yeah.
Suck off Mexican guys, and they would all be dressed in, like, inappropriate big costumes, you know. Actually, that's fine. If they're Mexican, they can wear the costume, right?
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
the costume.
You know, the big hat.
The big hat.
Sombrero.
Sombrero, yeah.
They don't have corks on their sombrero. That's the Australians, right?
Yes, but they don't wear sombreros.
Why do they put the corks on there? Is that a fly deterrent?
Yeah, insects, I think.
Right, okay.
I'm not an Australian, and I've never asked one about it, so...
Probably they don't wear them that much.
No, well, that's it. And I can't imagine Mexicans wear sombreros that much either.
No, I suppose not.
But it doesn't really matter either way if you're sucking them off for a shot of tequila, because... That will be, you know, on their other head. So, you know, you focus on the... I mean, if they had little corks on their bell end, that would be...
You have to take the sombrero off the bell end before you start.
Yeah.
Come on, this is a good...
And then pop it back on.
When you're finished.
When you're finished, and then enjoy your tequila.
But anyway, that was a very protracted thank you for being a friend to me. And I hadn't met you before that time.
No.
Hello, my friend, it's good to see you again. I got to say, you're looking great. I love what you've done with your nipples and your knees and your shiny bald pate.
Okay, Joe Lycett, net worth, rumours, Facebook and Instagram.
Oh, yes.
Have you been on there?
No, I somebody linked me to something, and it's written sort of hilariously, isn't it? What does it, remind me what it says?
It's clickbait, essentially. It's a form, there's so many forms of clickbait nowadays, as I'm sure you're aware.
Yes.
And this is just one of them. And it, they sometimes seem as if they're generated by machines, because the grammar is always slightly wonkoid. Or maybe it's being written by someone for whom English is not their first language, or whatever. But I always like it, and I have a voice that I read clickbait in, which is kind of like this. I always imagine that is the person writing the clickbait.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's like, yeah, I write a bit of clickbait. I also, you know, I got a few jobs.
Yeah.
But the clickbait's quite good. It pays quite well.
They would be the sort of person with a few jobs, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Personal life and spouse of Joe Lycett.
Yeah.
Joe Lycett was a comedian who was born and who still lives in Hall Green, Birmingham.
Not true.
Not true?
No.
This is from a couple of years back. This was posted in March 2017.
That would have been true.
Okay.
I'll take it back.
He identifies as pansexual.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Lycett does not like to talk much about his personal life. And this is the main reason why we don't have much more information about his dating, girlfriends, marriage and divorce. Have you been divorced?
Not to my knowledge, but...
Yes.
I've been divorced on reality a few times, I suppose, but not legally.
Okay. Joe Lycett is a person who gives his full attending and have studied at a renowned university.
Yeah.
He does his work in a very intelligent manner.
Oh, well, that's nice. Oh, that's... It feels less factual and more an opinion, but...
Some of the opinion creeps in occasionally. Mm. They like you a lot.
Yeah, they clearly do.
He might have many personal things. It's undoubtedly sure that the success he has got does not come alone, and it has surely Joe Lycett rumours associated with it.
Yes, it's got to, hasn't it? There's got to be.
Skeletons in the closet.
Yes, surely Joe Lycett rumours associated with Joe Lycett.
Who have you killed to get the sewing bee job?
I attempted to kill Claudia Winkleman, but I instead just maimed her, and that was enough for them to give me the job.
Joe Lycett rumour comes very rarely, but when it comes, it shakes the entire world.
Wow. The entire world.
Yes.
I would argue that's not true. I would argue that's definitely factually inaccurate.
Oh, it is true now.
I'm not sure.
2019.
People in Montenegro are going, what?
I mean, the last time I saw you, I said, oh man, you should come on the podcast.
Mm.
But I thought, I'll wait until he's more successful.
Yeah.
And it's really worked out. You're way more successful now.
Well, yeah, it's sort of been a good couple of years, I would say.
Yeah.
People have been very nice and given me some nice jobs.
Are you enjoying it, or are you going to go crazy?
I am loving it at the minute. I just did my favourite job I've ever done, which is this series I made for Channel 4, which is a consumer series.
So I heard you talking about that with Rich Herring.
Yeah.
What's that called?
It's called Joe Lycett's Got Your Back. And we filmed for about 3-4 months. And it's like Watchdog or Rogue Traders, those sorts of formats where we take a consumer issue and we try and solve it. But what I really loved about it is it felt... I loved the show Spooks when I was a kid. Did you watch Spooks?
When you were a kid? Holy Christ, that was only a few years ago.
I don't know, it was about sort of 10 years ago, something like that. And I loved all of the sense of like a team working on something, you know, quietly and
yeah. So Spooks was a British sort of espionage thing, was
yes.
it?
Yes. And their catchphrase was MI5, not 9 to 5.
Okay.
Terrible. But it was a great show. and there's lots of, you know, people pretending to be people they're not, and hidden cameras and all of that stuff, just really fun. And I've always wanted to be in something like that. I sort of wanted to be a spy, but I didn't want any of the responsibility or threat to my life. And this felt like a funny version of Spooks to me, because we did everything that they did in Spooks. I did hidden camera stuff where I had a little pinhole camera in my shirt. I pretended to be people I wasn't, so I did a job interview under an alias on the phone, so they didn't recognise me, with a fake CV. It was so fun.
Don't you get nervous?
Really nervous. But then the buzz afterwards when you've done something ridiculous was really worth it. My favourite, I think, was on one of the episodes we deal with a car hire company who could be argued sort of push insurance onto customers.
Right.
And we've one of our team got a job working there and was secretly filming them for a while, and they just admitted all sorts of bad practice while they were being filmed without realizing. And so we went and hired a Mercedes from the silver Mercedes, and they pushed the insurance on us, so we paid for the fully comp insurance. And then the next day I drove back on a truck, and on the back of the truck was a crushed up silver car with the same number plates as the Mercedes we'd hired from them, and basically said, oh, we had a bit of an accident, it was icy roads, and we've got fully comp insurance, so this car's fine, right, this is fine. And the guy got quite cross with me, and because he was cross, he didn't clock that I was saying loads of ridiculous things like, I think the radio still works, and I filled up the fuel tank like you asked me to. And he was so angry about it. It was just joyous. And knowing that he was kind of, he didn't realize he was being filmed. And yeah, it was just such a glorious experience.
Sometimes when I watch those kinds of hidden camera shows that are trying to expose dodgy practices, sometimes I find myself rooting for the people that they're trying to expose, because I feel a bit sorry for them. You know what I mean? Because I think a lot of people, well, certainly I feel, you know, that there are aspects of my life that I'm not necessarily proud of, or decisions I've made that I wouldn't want made public. You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course.
And so when you see those people getting busted for it, you think, oh, mate.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It is a bit cringe. But what we've been careful to do on this show is that all the kind of individuals are blurred out, so that nobody's recognisable. The people we're trying to sort of expose and sometimes humiliate are the people at the top of the company.
Yeah, yeah.
Who are controlling the thing and making lots and lots of money out of bad practice.
There you go.
But I also agree with you. It's sort of, when we did the pilot, it felt very strange, kind of being annoying and irking people on a reception desk and all that, because it's not their fault, and it's, you know, they're just doing their job.
Yeah, yeah.
But going through that process in the pilot meant that I knew to then, when I was in a reception and the receptionist is having to deal with some ridiculous thing I was doing, being really nice to them and saying, don't worry, we're not going to put you on screen, you're not our target, and actually saying it to them, so that reassuring them in that moment. Because we did a thing with EasyJet and I felt really bad because the woman on the desk was really nice and just doing her job. And so I was saying to her, don't worry, we'll blur you, your voice won't be recognisable, all of that stuff.
We used to do a little bit of prankery, me and Joe Cornish, on our TV show. And it was, I hated it so much. But the thing that made it bearable was, as you say, sort of explaining it to the people in a way so that you were still able to get some sort of genuine reaction, but they weren't being totally freaked out.
But were your pranks just funny things, or were they to get something done or to expose someone?
Well, the worst one we ever, like the best one we ever did was in the very first show, I think, which was, we went into a shop and we found all the items that said 20% free, like a box of cereal that said 20% extra free.
Yeah.
And so we opened up the box and we just started eating the cereal. And when the guy came along, he's like, what are you doing? We're like, oh, we're just taking the free bits. And so that was a good one.
That's really nice.
And you know, a few people got quite angry with us.
Yeah.
But we cleared it with the guy that owned the shop.
Okay.
So it was all fine, but his shop assistants didn't know and they got quite angry. But it was fine. It was totally harmless. But then we did another one that didn't go out, where I was, I had a character who was called Ken Corder. He was a bit like a sort of amalgam of people like Melvin Bragg. And it was a bit like a sort of more media heavy version of Alan Partridge, I suppose. And we did this one thing about, like, edgy indie filmmakers, because that's part of this character, was that he was a sort of edgy indie filmmaker.
Right.
And there were a lot of films coming out around that time in the 90s, which were quite sort of post-Trainspotting, edgy, lot of swearing, lot of quite laddie. And so we did this thing where we went in to a pub called the Dog Star in Brixton.
Mm-hmm.
And Ken saying, we're in gritty Brixton. If you want to get served in a pub in Brixton, you have to swear all the time. So we went in and we went up to the bartender, and there was a man and there was a woman behind the bar. And I just say, I'd like a drink, you bitch. So quite rightly, the man behind the bar just said, what the fuck did you say? And comes over and I was like, I just want a fucking drink, you stupid bastard. And so he hit me.
Okay.
And knocked the camera out of Joe's hand, both of which were 100% deserved.
Mm.
But it was awful. And then I had to, you know, then we kind of bought them drinks and said, listen, I'm really sorry. That just didn't work out. And I'm really sorry. But, you know, we just didn't think it through. Something in my head, I think partly I just wanted to be one of those people that did those edgy pranks, you know.
Yeah.
There were a lot of them around at the time, but I didn't have it in me.
I wouldn't have it in me to do that sort of thing either. I think because the joke's on the wrong person there, isn't it?
And it's not strong enough.
I don't know, it made me laugh. The idea of it made me laugh. But the whole way that I've managed to get around it on this show is because the joke is on a bad company.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's still, what's the word? It's not a natural thing to go into an environment and do something ridiculous, because every part of your body just says leave, run. But that's why it's hopefully funny at the on the other side.
It's a fine balance, isn't it? Because you're screwing around with the conventions of society, which are there for a reason, just to make life livable for all of us. And but then it is funny to see them subverted now and then, but you don't want them so completely smashed apart that people suffer or get humiliated.
Yeah, yeah.
I love your face so, like a painting by Picasso.
The eyes to the right, the nose to the left.
Other faces make me order, but your features are all in a nice
order. Order.
Joe Lycett, net worth.
Oh, yes.
We're going back to the net worth rumours Facebook and Instagram post that I found about you.
Right.
Joe Lycett, net worth is huge.
Oh, that's good.
Though he has not clearly revealed it yet.
Oh.
Joe Lycett, net worth will surely increase because of his constant hard work and efforts that he puts into his every work. And Joe Lycett, net worth will reach a big height, undoubtedly.
Oh, great. Well, that's good news.
So you've got all... I mean, it's very positive.
It's very positive. There doesn't seem to be any negatives in there at all. There's no...
No, man, they're 100% behind you. Joe Lycett Instagram is followed by a huge mass of people at the national and international level.
Wow.
Joe Lycett Instagram provides us a flood of information about him with the help of various status and pictures that he makes at the almost regular basis. He has a huge mass following and is loved, praised and admired by people all around the world on its entirety.
On its... Great.
So do you Instagram a lot?
Yeah, I do. I love Instagram.
Okay.
My life is constantly sort of through a filter of what's grammable.
Yeah.
Do you Instagram?
I don't.
It's probably better for your mental health. There's a thing that was doing the rounds. Often just people will start doing, like a trend will start where people start doing the same sort of posts.
Like a meme.
Like a meme, but like where people, where it's sort of personalizable.
Yeah.
Personalizable. Yeah, that is a word, I feel. And one of them recently was the throwback challenge, basically, where you posted a 10-year challenge, I think it was, where you posted a picture of yourself now and a picture of yourself 10 years ago next to each other.
Yeah, I saw that.
And it was just an opportunity for people to talk about their journey, and just such a tedious exercise. And the amount of friends that are posting pictures, I just thought, I don't care, and nobody cares, and it's not that impressive that you looked different 10 years ago, because that's the nature of time. And it just, it made me cross, but it made lots of people cross because lots of people were sort of complaining about it on other social media, saying like the thing on Instagram about 10-year challenge is so annoying and yada, yada, yada. But I didn't want to add to that approach because it's not funny.
Yeah.
So what I did is I did my 10-year challenge, but it was a picture of me that day and then a picture of a cuttlefish. And I did this long post about how I've learnt, I've lived, I've loved, I've had heartbreak, I've achieved so many things, but the main difference is I'm no longer a cuttlefish. And that was just a stupid idea. But now occasionally I'll just post that I'm a cuttlefish. And it's ridiculous, and I don't know where it's going or what it's... I don't really know why I find it funny, but I find it really funny.
Cuttlefish as well does feel as if you could be descended, like human. It's so primordial or
It's a great word as well, cuttlefish.
Yeah.
It's very pleasing to say.
I saw a post you made on Twitter as well about litter.
Yes.
Last year, it became a news story.
Yeah.
On the BBC anyway.
That's a weird thing that started to happen more often is I'll post a tweet or something and it'll become a news story.
I mean, the BBC news website more or less relies exclusively on tweets.
Yeah.
As far as I can tell.
It's extraordinary, isn't it? Yeah, I got very cross last year because there's this gorgeous park near me and it had just been a hot bank holiday weekend. And I went for a run the next morning. I think it was the Monday morning after. And it was just a sea of litter, just like everywhere. And I just sort of couldn't believe it. I just thought it seemed like such an obvious thing that I'd been taught, which is particularly in a park, like pick up your litter. But anyway, you just don't leave litter around. And how dangerous that is for the wildlife. It just made me really cross. So, again, I tried to make it not too earnest. So I think the post was something about here's me taking a selfie with all your litter or something, and I sort of did a silly face with
it. You said, hate to sound like your mother.
Yeah.
But if you enjoyed the beauty of Cannon Hill Park yesterday, then the least you can do is respect it and the safety of the animals that live in it by putting your rubbish in a bin. Here's a selfie I took with your mess. And so it's you wearing a pair of shades and headphones and grinning.
Yeah,
in front of this, really messy park.
Yeah. What was shocking about it is the amount of people that must have been involved in creating that mess. It was all cleared the next morning.
Mm.
But in that 24 hours, I had to run through a park that was full of litter. So that impacted on my quality
of life. You're hurting Joe Lycett.
You've hurt me.
Mm.
But also, that is a danger for animals in that area for those 24 hours. God, I am your mother. I've turned into everyone's mother. I've just remembered I did on the next weekend when it was really hot.
Yeah.
Because I anticipated it happening again. I did go a lot sort of further with it. And I did some tweet, which was something like, OMG, just found out that if you leave litter in a park today, it means that you want to fuck your dad. It was something stupid like that. Just so I've sort of escalated it in that way.
There you go. That does the job. Because, yeah, I was going to say that people who say you shouldn't, why can't you pick it up and throw it in the bin? It's sort of associated with an old school posh busybody or something.
Yeah,
you know, like,
which I am. And I'm happy to have that label.
OG busybody.
Yeah.
Chanel. That sounds like my wife.
Yeah.
My wife. Do you know what? She fucking loves you.
Oh.
You're one of the people, as soon as you come on TV, she's like, oh my God, I love him.
Oh, that's nice.
She sits there and literally grins at everything. She just delights in your presence.
Oh,
so
that's
do I.
Nice. You know. That sort of thing is quite lovely, isn't it, I suppose?
Yeah.
Someone I've never met is pleased to see me.
Yeah, it's a nice thing to be liked in that way, and they'll... Like, you pretty much could say anything and she would just still like you.
That's a challenge, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is this weird thing. It's something that's I've been aware of since Sewing Bee went out, that my sort of target market is now... the Sewing Bee is watched by 65-plus female.
Or, oh, that's not, your main
not,
demographic?
Not 65 females,
yeah,
plus women who are over the age of 65 makes up a massive section of that demographic. It's loved by kids and all sorts of different people as well. But a big chunk of it is that. And I keep getting stopped by older women, and I do feel a bit like I'm Barry Manilow. It's quite a sort of odd experience. But for that reason, whereas I used to be not particularly crude or whatever, but, you know, there would be times where I definitely remember posting an Instagram post where it was sort of me. It was a photo of me floating in the air. And I think the caption was something like, "Here's me bouncing on your dad's dick." It's something stupid like that.
I just remembered another one where you're in a fancy restaurant somewhere and you've got some chocolate pudding. And you just say, "Here I am in the exclusive blah, blah, blah restaurant in Russia eating some poo."
Yeah.
Made me laugh.
Well, good. But yeah, I'm not sure that, you know, the audience for Sewing Bee will appreciate the idea of me bouncing on a dad's dick. But,
well, one of them does.
Yeah.
And I'm married to her. That's a fun show, though.
It's a lovely show. It's really sweet. It takes ages to film, but they make a really lovely program out of it. It's a really charming thing.
Mm. Yeah. People are gutted when they get booted off.
You know, life doesn't always go the way you want, does it?
No. I mean, probably in the future, maybe they will, if things carry on the way they are, they'll probably phase out any kind of competitive or elimination shows because it'll be seen as too cruel for the snowflakes, Joe.
Snowflake generation.
Mm.
I suppose I'm a millennial, so I must be a snowflake too, right? And I'm quite liberal. And I love speaking to people that I disagree with. I find that really edifying. I had a really good experience just last week, actually. I woke up and I wasn't planning on going, and I woke up on the day of the march, the People's March, and I thought, I should go. I'll regret not going on this. So I got a cab.
This was the march for a second referendum.
For a second referendum. I got a cab. I was in Birmingham, so I got a cab from my house to the station. And the driver was a Muslim driver, and he said to me, where are you off to? And I said, I'm going to London for this march. And he said, oh, what's the march about? And I said, oh, it's about revoking Article 50 and having another vote on Brexit. And he said, Brexit's taking up so much at the minute, isn't it? You know, there's loads of other problems in the country, and Brexit's taking up all of the time to discuss it. He said, you know, there's problems like they're saying that it's okay to teach children in school that they can be gay. You know, they've got to sort that out. And I thought, ah. And I said, oh, why'd you say that? And he said, you know, I'm not homophobic. I've got lots of gay friends. But, you know, my religion teaches me that there are all sorts of different urges that we have. You know, I'm married and I see women in the street, but I don't act on that. And my religion teaches me that it's wrong to act on those urges.
Hmm.
And I said, oh, well, that's a shame, because I said I was bisexual because I didn't want to explain pansexuality at that point to him, because I thought, let's go in with baby steps. And he was saying, like, he didn't want to offend me, but he also really appreciated the fact that he could talk to me about it in a gentle way.
Mm-hmm.
And I was saying that, you know, there's lots of interpretations from his religion. There's lots of things that he's not acting on within the Quran.
Mm.
So you can't take that sort of double standard.
How did he feel about that?
He was fine with it. He was really, he kind of loved it. And he found it really funny as well, because I said the old classic line of straight people keep having gay kids, and he loved that. He thought that was so funny. He told me that the anus wasn't meant for sex. And I said, okay, well, have you ever had a blowjob? And he very proudly said, oh, yes, I've had a blowjob. And I said, well, the mouth's not really meant for sex, is it? And he went, oh. And then I said, I'll see you in hell. And he really found that funny. He thought that was brilliant. And then I said, oh, I've actually never had anal sex. And he went, oh, you're a top. And then high-fived me, which was unexpected. But it was, neither of us came away feeling like we'd persuaded the other. And there was no, I didn't want to necessarily persuade him. I didn't want him to, you know, in the space of a 15-minute taxi journey.
Sure, but you've exposed him to your perspective.
Yeah, and I'd been exposed to his in a way that I'd not been either.
Yeah.
I kind of could have guessed it, but he probably could have guessed my thing as well, you know. And I was saying to him, I'm not harming anyone in my sexuality. No one's being hurt. And it makes me sad that you feel that I am immoral in some way, but I don't believe that. But he didn't, you know, he didn't try to sort of stop me being gay or any of that kind of stuff. It was just lovely. It was just really nice and a really, you know, it will stay with me for the rest of my life, that exchange.
I got you some presents, Joe.
Oh, wow. I didn't bring you anything.
You brought Joe Lycett.
Okay.
So that's the best present a man could get.
The greatest gift.
Yeah, man. I got you some popping candy.
Oh, how lovely.
Pop Rocks.
Great.
Green apple. It's artificially flavoured.
Oh, they didn't actually use green apple.
No, it's not organic popping candy.
It's very nice in the mouth, isn't it, popping candy?
Do you ever have it?
I think I have. Is it sort of sparkles in your mouth?
Yeah, man.
It? Pops.
40 calories per sachet.
That's not too
bad. That's like a diet. You could have that as part of a calorie controlled diet.
Yes, that's great. Thank
you. Yeah. Do you want to try some? You don't have to.
Yes, I'll do it. I won't have the full packet because there's actually quite a lot in there.
You have a little bit, I'll have a little bit.
I'm going to have just a little... Oh, gosh, there's a real odour. And just stick it on the old tongue.
Place it on the tongue. Mm. Instant poppery. Give it some saliva. Can I have some?
Yeah.
I'm going to have a bit more than you.
You did a good job there.
Oh!
I should have put more in. It's very pleasing, isn't it?
Like, they all pop, but then there are some that are a slightly different colour, and they really explode.
Are you familiar with ASMR?
Yeah. Tash Dimitriou told me about it.
Oh, yes. This is the sort of thing that gives some people ASMR.
Right. Explain ASMR for people who don't know.
Autonomous sensory meridian response. It's a very pleasing, people call them braingasms, and it's triggered by, they don't fully know, but some of the common triggers are whispering. I get it when, wow. when you exhaled then, sort of the dust from the pop rocks came out, it looked like you were smoking some sort of apple-based
crack.
Spliff. Crack. Apple crack.
Apple crack. Are you getting a braingasm?
No, I'm not. It's not a trigger for me. It's actually doing the reverse. My brain has gone limp.
Yeah, I imagine I've lost quite a lot of listeners.
Yeah.
I apologise, listeners.
But some people will love that.
Mm.
So
there you go, Pop Rocks.
What a lovely, thoughtful gift. Thank you.
And now I want you to be honest with me about these, because I bought these from a shop where I buy a lot of gifts. Describe what it is.
Well, it's a box, and on the top of it, it says fuck. In very big letters. Sort of cream letters on a red background. 40 stickers, 4 different statements, it says. Oh, I see. So
it's a little box of stickers.
Little box of stickers.
And they're big old stickers. They're like labels.
I'm just going to open the cellophane. Now, this is the sort of thing that ASMR people would really enjoy. So I'm just going to puncture the cellophane.
Do it right up to the mic.
Thumbnail, and then yes, there's a sticker here that just reads "What the fuck," and I can affix that to whatever I want.
Mm-hmm.
It says "What the fuck." What are the other
ones?
There's
4 varieties.
4 varieties, 40 stickers. Oh, I've got them all out now.
And it says you can put them on a laptop.
Oh, or, yes, you could, yeah.
Workbook or...
It says, what the fuck, fuck, fuck no, and fuck yeah. Really handy, that. I like them. I like them a lot.
Would you seriously use them?
Yeah, absolutely would use them.
Would you put it on your laptop?
Not sure I'd put it on my laptop.
Why not?
No, I probably would, actually. Yeah, why not?
Fuck yeah.
Fuck yeah on my laptop. Or... maybe just fuck, actually, on the laptop.
Mm-hmm.
Can I put one on your laptop? You've got stickers on there.
Fuck no.
Okay. Or is that you want a fuck no sticker?
No,
or
that
you
is don't want them? Fucking no way do I want a big sticker saying fuck on my fucking laptop.
Oh, okay.
Because I just think, here's my perspective on it, right? Swearing is fun because it's slightly subversive. And if you are just commodifying...
yeah...
the whole fun of swearing and selling stickers.
Yeah.
Then you are eating away at the fun of swearing.
It's the sort of thing basic bitches would enjoy, isn't it, this?
What's that?
Basic bitches are a catch-all term for people that are into basic things. So people who watch EastEnders are basic bitches. You know, the sort of standard mainstream, X Factor.
Yeah.
ITV, basic bitches.
Okay, right.
Loose women.
Yeah,
who I would actually describe as sort of low-key fascists, but
yeah,
Also basic bitches.
I think things started going wrong when people were wandering around with the, you know, the French Connection UK t-shirts, FC UK.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, it looks a bit like fuck.
There was a glorious thing that happened, actually. A kid at my school got his mum to pick him up a t-shirt, but she got it wrong and it just had fuck off written on it. Which was glorious. He came in all proud and it's like, just totally wrong. I like it. I think it's all right. I wouldn't use them earnestly.
Right, okay. Well, good. Then maybe you'll like my final gift to you.
Ah.
I'm sort of re-gifting this. This was kindly given to me. This is a book, a journal, and it's a sort of nicely bound journal. So it looks kind of posh. It's got gold, you know, the sides of the pages
leaf on the
are gold.
Page ends, yeah.
So that, oh, mate.
That's lovely.
And then in very curlicued, serif heavy writing on the front.
Calligraphy. Yeah.
It says in embossed gold, "You got this shit."
Oh, that's horrible.
It is horrible, isn't it?
Yeah, that is horrible.
And I was given this by a lovely man called Barry, who allowed me to do some work in progress shows at the brilliant Bill Murray Comedy Club in Islington.
Lovely, yeah.
Great venue. And they were nice enough to give me this little gift afterwards. But I hated the gift. And I thought, I'm never going to use a book that says you got this shit on it. I don't want it. And I thought,
can I feel it?
Maybe Joe will like it.
I don't. But I do like the
I mean, it's a really nice journal. The actual quality of
the quality
whole
of the
thing.
Journal is really nice.
I started writing some suggestions for names for your future tours in the front.
Oh, brilliant, because I have run out, genuinely.
It's fucking difficult, isn't it? I thought it would be easy.
Yeah.
Does it remind me of some of your previous ones?
Some likes it hot. If Joe likes it, then you should have put a ring on it. That's the way a hat Joe likes it.
All I got was, well, what does it say in the, it's in the, on the first page there. They weren't they were rubbish.
On, you got, oh, I see, have you written in here? Lice it to kill, secrets and lies it. And you've done 3 stars to suggest that you're going to write.
I was
going to
write another one, but then you arrived.
Oh, and then I arrived.
Yeah.
New Joe Lycett tour names by Adam Buxton, aged 49. That's lovely. 50th birthday this year or next?
Yeah, this year, yeah.
What are you going to do?
Just continue to exist, I hope.
You look great for 50.
Are you joking?
No, you look really...
Thanks, man.
You've aged well.
Well, that's nice of you.
You look distinguished.
Distinguished.
But your skin looks well hydrated.
Yeah, I do try and moisturise as much as possible.
Mm.
I'm beginning to worry that I'm drinking too much tea.
Too much tea?
Yeah.
What, like standard builder's brew or...?
Yeah, Yorkshire tea. What? So tell me this. Do you know this? Because you're supposed to drink lots of water every day, right?
Yeah.
Does tea count as water?
Yeah.
Does it?
Yeah.
And I couldn't find a definitive answer online.
Well, I suppose it's a diuretic in some ways.
It does, because it's got caffeine, which is a diuretic, so that's dehydrating you.
That will dehydrate you a little bit, I suppose. But I think... you're still putting more hydration into your body than not by drinking tea.
Mm.
I don't think you can dehydrate from drinking tea.
Right, okay.
It might just not be as hydrating as a glass of water.
Yeah. How many glasses of water do you drink a day?
Oh, gosh. 5.
It's supposed to be 8.
Is it?
I don't know. Yeah, maybe.
It depends on the size of the glass, though, doesn't it?
It does, exactly. Do you ever drink fizzy water?
Yeah, sometimes I do, yeah.
You're fucked.
I see it as a good substitute to...
you're going to die. Your teeth are going to fall out. Good substitute to what? Like fizzy pop?
No, to like a glass of fizzy wine. I'll have like a glass of fizzy water.
Right, okay, yeah. Fizzy wine. What do you mean, like a spritzer? Or no, just like wine that's gone off?
Champagne. Oh, you know.
Right, okay, yeah. Fair enough. Sparkling wine.
Prosecco.
Secco, yeah.
Cava. English sparkling.
Mm-hmm. You like that?
I love wine.
Do you ever have Lindauer?
What's that?
I think Australian sparkling wine.
No.
My dad, who was a wine expert and absolutely loved champagne and wrote about it and walked in that region and... but...
Yeah, I bounced on his dick. I remember him.
I mean, that should be the out, obviously. But now I'm going to have to explain the rest of why I brought it up.
Yeah.
He liked Lindauer.
Okay.
That's the end of that story.
Mm.
But you bounced on his dick.
Sorry, I couldn't help myself.
Wait, this is an advert for Squarespace.
Hey guys, it's Broshak with me, Paul Broshak. We got Mike here. We're going to talk about his new MMA comedy special. We're going to talk about his view counts, and we're going to talk about conspiracy theories. What's up, Mike?
Hello, Paul.
Hey, brother.
I'm fine, thank you. I don't want to talk about any of those things anymore.
You don't?
No. I want to talk about... I built a website, Paul.
All right. Stream some fights, settle some beefs, stick it to the elites, that kind of thing.
No. It's mainly dog pictures, Paul. And I did it on Squarespace. Have you heard of Squarespace? I went to squarespace.com/Buxton and I did a free trial. And I tried some of the beautiful templates, Paul. And I typed things in. I dragged in pictures of the dogs. And before I knew it, I had a website, Paul. So I bought it and I've made some very sweet dog t-shirts. And I sell those on the shop on the website.
Uh-huh. But do you still fight and stuff?
A little bit, but not really. Oh, and Paul, I wanted to tell you that when it comes time to buy your website or domain on Squarespace, if you use the offer code Buxton, you save 10%. Paul.
Thanks, Mike. Where'd you do that free trial?
Squarespace.com/Buxton.
And how sweet were the dogs?
Very.
Continue.
Yep.
Hey, welcome back, Podcats. That was Joe Lycett, of course, that you heard talking to me back before the break. I'm very grateful indeed to Joe for his time. I look forward to our paths crossing once again in the real world. So how are you doing, Podcats? If you're listening to me in the midst of the lockdown, I hope you're doing all right. Getting through it with minimal trauma. Oh, look at this. The Christmas tree has fallen off the back of a lorry. Literally. There's Christmas tree fields around this part of the world, and they're cutting them down, slipping them into nets, and loading them onto the back of trucks and transporting them out to the shop. But one of them's fallen off, and it's just lying here. Free Christmas tree, Rosie, in the net. It looks a bit like a pod, a big giant pod from Invasion of the Body Snatchers, but a festive version where instead of emotionless clones, Santa comes out, except it's an emotionless Santa, and he just gives a hollow laugh before distributing completely empty presents like the ones they have in shop window displays. The saddest of all the presents. Maybe I'll drive back later on and snaffle that guy. Anyway, before I go today, just wanted to let you know about a podcast appearance that I made recently that is now available. And I already told you that I was on Griefcast recently for a second time. I was on the very first episode of Griefcast, hosted by Cariad Lloyd, brilliant and versatile comedian and actor and writer. And if you haven't ever heard her podcast, Griefcast, I do recommend it, especially if you've experienced a loss and you're up for hearing a variety of comedians talking about their experiences of grief. Then give Griefcast a listen. It's always a good mixture of funny moments with some obviously quite emotional moments too. And that's what my most recent conversation with Cariad was like, talking about my mum. I got quite emotional a few times. Anyway, I was slightly less emotional, at least in that way, on the Drunk Women Solving Crime podcast recently. That was a bit more up-tempo. In case you haven't heard it, Drunk Women Solving Crime is a true crime podcast with a twist. I'm reading from the blurb. A twist of lime. Join writer/comedian hosts Hannah George, Katie Wilkins, and Taylor Glenn as they welcome top guests from comedians to crime writers to test out their drunk detective skills. I would say that it's not like Drunk History where everyone gets absolutely hammered. The irresponsible drinking aspect isn't totally central to the whole concept, I don't think. Even though I did have a couple of shots of very delicious cognac during my appearance, which loosened me up a little, made me a bit shoutier than normal. I can't quite remember. But it was good fun. And we just, you know, talked about crime in its various forms. I tried to relate some of my experiences of crime. I think I talked about various times that my bike has been nicked. And then we discussed a robbery, an art theft. It was good fun. So that's out now. I'll put links to these in the description of the podcast. Okay, it's cold. I'm going to head back. Another podcast out next week. Probably about, how many? I don't know, four to go until the end of this current run. Ending on Christmas Day with the traditional Adam and Joe Christmas Day podcast. I can tell you that there has been a development, only a slight development, but a significant one, related to the Tom Cruise doodle story. Anyway, that's a teaser for Christmas Day. In the meantime, thank you very much indeed to Seamus Murphy Mitchell for his production support. Thanks to Matt Lamont for additional editing. Thanks to Helen Green for podcast artwork. Thanks to Acast for their continued help and support. And thanks to you very much indeed for listening and being encouraging about the podcast. Makes it that much more fun to do, I find, when people enjoy it, you know. Interesting stuff, Buckles. Why don't you go away now? Okay, I will. Until next time we meet, go easy, tread carefully, have fun, not too much fun, more fun than that though, and for what it's worth, remember, I love you,